Mountain High Time, 2 hours of an organization to the madness, discussing the ever-changing dynamics of being both physically and mentally prepared for a plethora of possible outcomes to our future and present. A look into the latest technologies, new scientific discoveries, and how they might be used in connection to the human domain and controlling it, ancient cultures and places. Be warned. This is an opinionated look through headlines. Guests that are not afraid to question the narrative. A little bit of crazy ramblings of a stoner conspiracy factist that pushes constitutional concepts. The place and the time are the same, another dimension we call Mountain High Time. Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Mountain High Time. Right here on Revolution.radio, where information never sleeps and truth breaks the spell.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hello and welcome to Plato's Cave on WZZR. Coming to you from Australia for Revolution Radio on revolution.radio. That's right. Home to ideas. Many ideas. Divergent ideas. Ideas that you might not like. Ideas that you love, and ideas that you love to hate. But most of all, there's no filter here, apart from the foul language filter that we all adhere to, of course. Other than that, all ideas are good. Importantly, though, because it is such an idea landscape, no corporate sponsorship exists and can't exist, obviously, because, you know, who wants to hear about a revolution in the morning when you're trying to sell pancakes and Coca-Cola? Good luck with that. So it needs you, the listener, to donate if you can. If you can't donate, that's okay. I dig it. Maybe you can tell people about the station and maybe they can donate. But it does take the donations for the station to remain on the air. Okay? And any kind of currency is good, including crypto, if you can do so. Ooh, that rhymed. I'm so
surprised
talented. The burden of my talent weighs me down. That's what's happening here. No, but seriously, if you can donate or tell people at the station, that would be really appreciated, especially if you like the content. And I imagine if you're listening, you do. So that's that. Today is the 8th of February, 2024. That means we are a couple months in now. It's a year. Time just goes by like that. It really does. It's a crazy old thing. Now, you can catch the cave if you can. Catch it if you can. Catch it if you can. Catch the cave. Catch the cave. Catch it if you can. On the air, on the line, and onto your smart device. So grab an app to listen anywhere or listen at home on a great table of digital radio. That's right. Archives are free as well. At least for now. Another good reason to donate, if you can. Go in there and check it a lot. Free content. Munch away. munch. I'm binging on content. Before we start broadcasting at you in anger, we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land from which we broadcast. And for Dave,
it's the Bundjalung.
Of course it is. And for myself, the Darug people. And we would like to pay our respects to elders, past, present, and future. Dave.
Yes.
Oy vey. Huh?
I want to skip this year. I want to go straight to 2025. I'm done. Already. Just, you know.
It's a bit like that. You know, I feel you. I really do. It's been nonstop. And the crazy never stops. That's one thing we can always count on. We discussed last time that we already passed the 1.5 degrees, warming threshold. We already passed it. In fact, we've passed it for a year. Okay. And now we are looking to 2 degrees, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what does it really mean? We all talk about stopping. It's like you got a freight train coming down the track. You got a freight train coming down the track. It's still a fair way off, but you can hear it. You can feel the track vibrating. Mm-hmm. You can. You even feel a gush of air coming your way. Well, let's say you're standing in a tunnel. And it's just you. It's just a person. Right? There's nothing else there to help you. Just you. Well, Dave, what do you think your chances are of stopping that freight train?
Very little from a bystander's point of view.
Yes, we're small to none. You'll be the ketchup on the sidewalk is what you're going to be.
Mm.
And this is where we are here, okay? I don't care who is responsible. I don't care about, the assigning blame and this whole carbon trading scheme. You know what I think? This is what I think, because I'm a cynic. What I think is this, Dave. I look at this all, the carbon trading, I look at the fear-mongering, et cetera, obviously people that are afraid of something are more easily controlled, right? And they're uncertain about stuff as well, even better, as we discussed. So is it a fact that humans are responsible? I honestly don't know. There's science that says yes, but we also know that climate change is a constant on the planet. We know this. We know that the climate changes on a regular basis, not in living memory, as we we've been living a fairly mild period for most of our civilization, 10, 15, 20,000 years, something like that. But certainly there have been massive changes in the climate, and that was occasioned by many things: volcanic activity, impacts, dinosaurs farting. Movements of the continents across the globe. There was one gigantic continent, Pangaea, back in the day, and several hundred million years ago. And imagine you having one continent only and the rest is water. That'd be a completely different climate and weather pattern there.
This is where science makes a huge leap, that there was only one continent.
Yeah.
Imagine if there was another continent, but it just suffered an amazing strike from a celestial object.
Yeah,
and all of the movement of the plates was the dissolving of that away and being sent below, because that's what happens.
Well, we can't explain the wobble, and the Earth is tilted on its axis as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a wobble in our axis, we know that, okay, and there's also the tilt at 23.5 degrees.
And none of which. The moon is not aligned to our galactic plane. Sorry, our solar plane.
Yeah.
Did you know?
Yeah, I did actually. It's Venus, interestingly enough.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, the Earth Moon relationship is unique, as far as we can tell, in the known universe, as far as we know. It's completely from a...
Well, I'm triggered.
There's no other... Sorry?
I've triggered you.
I know, you did. sorry, brother. You brought it on yourself. No. It's unique, and it is completely inexplicable. There's no other planet that we know of, exoplanet or us, solar planets here, that has a moon as big as the Earth. In relation to the Earth, it's just there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But the point I'm trying to make is that nobody is telling you to prepare. Everybody's telling you to buy an electric car and to go to the hairdresser less. Yeah, that's the thing. And to consume less, blah 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 blah, whatever. Now, it's nothing. There's nothing you can do. I hate to say, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, right? But the two biggest, if you look at carbon emissions, the two biggest culprits are the U.S. and China, by far, and then of course, it's big industry, really, overall. And then, and as Dave has pointed out so eloquently when we spoke about this last, there's this study he shared with us that showed that, in fact, in Australia, and I imagine by extension the rest of the world, mm-hmm. because of the bushfires we've seen, the bushfires contribute a horrendous amount.
More than half.
Yeah, now that's natural. You can't stop that. That's not gonna, oh yeah, I'll buy a Tesla and that'll stop all the bushfires in the world. Hoorah. So it's actually a nonsense to want to stop it. And the thing is this, it will not be stopped. It will not. Let's assume for a second that will make all the difference in the world. Tomorrow we're carbon zero, right? Zero. Not neutral, but zero. Neutral just means it's a balance. Zero means there are none. There are no emissions, nothing. Right? Let's say that's true for us, human. I'm talking about human emissions now, okay? There are still carbon emissions in the world that are coming out from the tundra, the methane, okay? From rotting vegetation, from fires, from volcanic activity, from deep sea trenches, you know, undersea gas, etc. And that'll be enough. It doesn't need humans to affect climate change, because it has happened before.
That's okay? true.
But not a single person in the world is telling you to prepare. Now, what would that preparation look like? Look, it depends on your means. It depends on where you are in the world, and it depends on how far you're willing to go, really.
If you have hundreds of millions of dollars, you probably already have a bunker fully stocked with food and water. And
On the moon.
Sure. That's $1 billion. That gets you there.
That'll get you there, yeah.
And a couple of billion gets you to Mars in the future.
Yeah. But Dave is right. If you're well off, then chances are you're going to be okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, being okay in an extinction level event or apocalyptic event or whatever we are looking at here, it's not really great. And I'll tell you why. So you can survive whatever is coming, right? But then you have to ask yourself, well, is it worth it?
Aftermath of doing that is basically the Stone Age again.
Well, if for all intents and purposes, Dave is correct. If the event or the accumulation of events or the domino effect of events that are coming our way are sufficiently large and catastrophic enough, then yeah, it's back to the Stone Age. So the thing is this, right? We really only know what we have today, right? So you know what you have today. It's pretty good. I like it, right? You're indoor plumbing, you got antibiotics. Yeah. It's all good, right? Mm-hmm. No, but for most of our history, we didn't have that, or most of us didn't have that. Now, you could argue that still most of us don't have it, and that's probably fair. But we didn't have it, and we don't really have any written records beyond 7,000-8,000 years ago. Not really, right? I mean, we know that stuff happened then. There were people, right? They built Göbekli Tepe. Someone did, okay? And then probably further back in time as well, right? If you look at the star alignments of certain sites, you know, and you date it by the astronomical markers rather than what we like to think we know. So you can argue that, you know, 14, 15, 20,000 years ago, there might have been people around. And certainly at the end of the last ice age, Dave and I, and not just Dave and I, but many others, including, of course, leading the charge, Graham Hancock, believes there was a civilization that we lost at the end of the last ice age. So this was an ice age civilization. People always have this misconception that the ice age wiped out that civilization. No. That civilization, whatever you're going to call it, was thriving during the ice age.
That's right.
It was thriving, yeah, in the equatorial and more temperate zones, which you have to understand, we had a lot more land available in those areas back then. A lot more land. Sunderland, Doggerland, you know, we all know now that all this land was not underwater. We know this now, right? We know that a lot of it is underwater, and a lot of people are dredging up stuff from the bottom of the ocean, as it were. And we're looking at a lot of maps for these really ancient civilizations. But the point is this. We don't know anything about these people. Not really. Well, we know they built with really large blocks of stone. We know that. We know they navigated the planet because we have maps that don't make sense. We have. They were interested in the stars.
They don't make sense because our science in lockstep don't agree that they had the technology to circumnavigate the globe back then and visit all the continents. That's why it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, sorry, that's 100% correct, Dave. Because we don't allow that knowledge for our forebears. But nonetheless, there it is. Right, that's why it doesn't make sense.
That was still hunter-gatherers, apparently.
Yeah, Charles Hapgood's book, Maps of Ancient Sea Kings, is actually, I still think it's seminal, the work, even though people call it debunked. I don't think so. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But we don't know, other than the physical evidence, which we deny, we're very good at that. No, that's something else. No, you don't understand. That's Roman. Mm-hmm. It's all Roman. Yeah, sure. I won't talk about Zahir Hawass, but that was just, anyway, but, We have no knowledge of this particular civilization, and I maintain there were many, many others before that in cycles of similar destruction, as it were. What was life like after the kind of like the flood? We think it was like a flood and all that, right? There's the flood myth that has crossed the world. It would have been hard life. I mean, the vast majority of the population would have been dead. The civilization itself would have been wiped out mostly. I mean, some people would have preserved knowledge, which we don't have, because we know of these people that went around to start or kickstart civilization again. They would have been maybe in some places underground, potentially, right, where they were safe or on high mountaintops. Nobody knows. But the point is, there were some people that preserved some form of civilization. Now, 14,000 years later, we have no idea who these people are, who preserved the grains, for example, potentially, right? Or the knowledge of domestication, et cetera, we don't know. I can only imagine that their life must have been extremely hard, and the survivors that really knew nothing. Imagine something like that happens today. And let's look at Sydney in Australia here. We've got 6 million people. We're not all rocket scientists or engineers or, agricultural experts, but regular folk having a day job. We buy our food in the supermarket and we watch TV. But beyond that, our survival skill set is pretty low. Now, having said that, in Sydney, it's probably better than most places because people go camping, etc., so maybe a little bit better. But if civilization came from it, and let's say, I don't know, 95% of Sydney was destroyed, for argument's sake, and only a handful of people survived, they would have to start from scratch. Right? And I dare you, telling me what the ratio of sulfur to saltpeter is in gunpowder,
And carbon. Probably don't. Carbon, that's right. Yeah.
And charcoal. Yeah, there's three ingredients.
That's right.
Right? So, but that's a very simple example, right?
And where are you going to get the sulfur?
Where are you going to get the sulfur? Well, where you should get it is from dung, right? So if you've got a whole bunch of poop, as it were, from animals, it collects... that's the saltpeter. The sulfur you can get, ideally, from deposits in the earth or from volcanic
that's
areas.
Right.
But to find it first. You have to find it, right? Anyway. The salt of Peter, right? That's where you find an animal poop.
Mm-hmm.
But Dave is right. Where do you find it all, right? So you have to find it all. So all the materials, so you might understand that you know what you had, like light bulbs. It took Edison famously, thousands of attempts to make the light bulb work.
That's right.
In the end, it was tungsten that he coiled in a certain way around a ceramic, a spool, right?
That's right.
And then... Because before that, it would just melt. The metal would melt, be light for a little bit, and then it would melt. It'd be gone, or it would poof, or the glass would explode, or whatever. Something would happen.
Yeah, they're all the icons. So,
So you need just the right amount of resistance in the wire for it to glow rather than melt.
And a vacuum. You've got to pull a vacuum on it.
That's the. How do you do it? Oh, you just suck all the air. That's how you suck. Yeah. Now we know how
keep
to
going,
do it.
Keep going, Watson.
It's almost there. We almost had it. But see, we laugh about this now. But now, let's say this thing were to happen, and you're standing there, there are no manufacturing capabilities, all gone. Mm-hmm. There's no material sciences. Right? You don't have access to advanced anything. The most advanced thing you have is a rock and a stick, if you're lucky. I got a bigger rock with a bigger stick.
It would, knocking us back probably 200 years is not really truly Stone Age, but because some people might have kept a tool, some people may be able to have enough knowledge to, I don't know, make horse and cart happen again, yeah?
Ah, but you see, there's whole development there as well, right? Because, Dave, where is the nearest horse to you?
Hopefully it climbed up the mountain with you, with some cows.
Yeah, yeah, and the pigs and the chickens.
That's right, already see, roasted. Look at you, Dave.
Yeah. Look at there's roasted chicken coming up with me. No, you see,
there's a red rooster store floating up there.
What Dave just described, the 200 year setback, mm-hmm. that's if you are in a community that works together.
And so if you survive, that's the best case scenario.
Correct. If you survive in a community, you would all, overnight you would all be Amish all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, nothing after 1888. Okay, no zippers for anyone. But yeah, Dave is 100% correct. Now that's if you have a community that can work together and pull together and for the greater good, without bickering, because the thing is this, because we are so mollycoddled. That's an Australian term for coddled or cuddled to death and nanny stated to death in a way.
That
we don't, I mean, there's all these disaster movies, right, with the rich or man or woman that, just can't believe the world has come to an end, and where are the servants, and where's my martini, and how come nobody's shining my shoes, right? And they're usually the first ones that I get eaten. But the thing is that...
Hang on. Wipers?
Bitch boy. But it is certainly something to consider because Mel Brooks is he's gold. He's a creative genius. But see, this is the thing. All of these amenities, these luxuries, even they be gone. And if you're an avid camper, then your chances of survival are pretty good. But I'm talking about real camping, right? Where you might even be a bit of a hunter, but you can hunt with bow and arrow because eventually bullets will run out. Because, again, in order to make bullets, you need a whole bunch of stuff to make bullets, right?
Guns a reasonably hot fire to melt lead.
Yeah.
Some people who grew up in our era, Mackie, may have a bullet making kit,
which included
molds and everything.
He's listening right now. Yeah, absolutely.
Essay. Yeah, yeah.
He makes his own bullets.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, and you've got to make your own, black powder for that.
Well, that's the kicker, right? But it's the accelerant. If you don't know how to make black powder, it ain't no gun. I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen. So it's either a bow and arrow or a crossbow. That's where you...
Yeah, that's right.
The crossbow is not bad. A crossbow is pretty powerful, right? In fact,
it'll make a wild boar pretty angry, I'll tell you that much.
That's true. But during the Middle Ages in Germany, during the peasant revolts, they had crossbows that were loaded with stones, like round granite. That would actually penetrate the armor and kill.
Oh, wow.
The knight. And owning one was punished real by death, obviously.
Oh, because you could defeat the overlords.
That's exactly right. Oh. So anyway, but so
it sounds like an AR-15, Mackie. Now,
well, only slower, but yes,
automatic weapons. Yeah, no, it's in today's currency. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Completely. Yeah, completely. So you are okay. Let's say you have all this stuff. That's okay, right? The problem comes when you actually get sick, or God forbid, you get injured. Right? There's a really interesting anecdote. I can't remember where I heard it, but this was about the beginning of civilization, right? So students were posing the question to their anthropology professor, and they said, "Look, when did, you know, civilization? What is a good starting point for civilization? I mean, what was an indicator that civilization is here now?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "Okay, it's not the building of cities. It is not even coming together, for the same religion or anything like that, or the invention of, you know, significant technology. It's none of that." What she said, she showed them a bone, and I think it was a femur. I can't remember. So it was a human bone, either an arm bone or like a femur, and it was broken, but it had been set, and it had healed. Now, she said, civilization started when we took the time to help our fellow human beings get better. So this person had a broken leg. It was complete. There's nothing they could do by themselves. So they had the leg set, and the others would look after this person, bringing them food and water until mm-hmm. they were better. Mm-hmm. And they lived quite a while, you can tell by the bones, you know, after the break had healed. That's when civilization started, when we starting to cooperate like that, right? When we started to look after each other, which is, I think, is a great, I mean, it's just a point of view, but I actually can see that, right? That makes perfect sense to me. To be able to see beyond the convenient and necessary and help, because it would have been extra work for everybody else to help this person, right? And if an animal gets sick, right, or has a broken leg, guess what happens? That animal dies.
That's right. It. Yeah.
Right. In fact, predators seek out the weak and the injured.
That's right.
Specifically, right, and the others don't come to help. Right. Oh, well, if it's an elephant and that calf, that's a different thing. But I'm talking about in generality.
I know.
Right?
I've seen those videos too.
Yeah. So it is certainly something to consider. And if we can do that, work together like this, then we have a chance, right? And we can rebuild slowly. But we have to start, well, without electricity. And that's a biggie. Electricity and medicine. Those are the two things that are going to slow us down significantly.
So on top of this huge mountain where we've been able to find refuge during...
And roast chickens.
And roast chickens. on top of that, I hope there was a library, because if there wasn't, it's only going to be whatever we can remember.
Yes. And how? Okay, so we're all fairly well educated, and Dave really highlighted a very important point here. So we all went to school. We can all read. We've got a rudimentary understanding of the world. You know, we can do a math in our head. We can read. We understand what the world looks like. We have a good understanding of society in general. And we've got some good common knowledge, etc., etc. Now, how do you educate the next generation when survival is the first order of the day?
Yeah, that's right.
Would you teach them to read? Well, it's no point because you haven't got any books, right? Or maybe you have books. So maybe you teach them to read, but those books are going to last forever, especially if they're paper. Because if they're electronic, they're now useless.
Okay, they're gone. That's right.
If you've got a Kindle, that's now a doorstopper. Okay. So what do you do? I mean, do you teach your children? You teach them what they need to survive, right? But to me, it really comes down, Dave, to medicine. Because childbirth, right, for the most part, especially in the Western world, that's actually, it is so assisted.
I know.
In the last 100 years that it's almost insane, right? And back in the olden days, before penicillin, before all of that, and before the understanding of bacteria and you know, having, you know, mm-hmm. hot water and so forth and cleanliness in general, a lot of the women were dying in giving birth, either during the birth or from an infection afterwards.
That's right. Yep.
That was quite common.
I've seen so many census entries where it's stated, like from England, where it's mm-hmm. stated that the mother died during childbirth. But the child lived.
Yeah, quite common. Horrifically, it's still common in some parts of the world, obviously, as we all know. It's also horrific, but you know, the people that are best equipped to survive any of these things, the people that never really bought into civilization, like the Kalahari Bushmen, or the people in the Amazon, or even people that in here in Outback Australia that sort of, you know, taken up the old Aboriginal way, if you will.
Yeah.
Or even Highland, the people in the Highlands of Papua New Guinea, right? So all of these people that look down upon thinking, you know, they're primitive and uncivilized, they have a great chance of surviving this. Because for the most part, apart from, you know, whatever catastrophe might befall us, whatever it might be, you know, their life wouldn't change. Right?
So and they would have witnessed our civilization rise and disappear.
Yeah, completely.
Imagine those stories for the dreaming.
Yeah. And they would just go on. Because again, you know, the impact on their life wouldn't be as bad, because some of these more, let's say, natural living people have the old lore of medicinal herbs, you know, and poultices, maybe even venoms that could help you out, right? And they use ayahuasca in South America certainly to get, you know, deeper insights on their spirit journeys. It's a real thing, right? And they would be okay. We not so much. Not so much.
My mother used to create a poster. What is it, posters? Apply it to if I had a deep splinter.
Okay.
They'd apply it on the outside, wrap it, bandage it up, and come back in a couple of days, and it had come to the surface.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
See, stuff like that, right? My grandfather had a big book of herbs, which we lost during the war or whatever, I don't know. But he was, like, in that book, this is in Europe, though, European herbs, right? Every herb was written down, what to use it for, how to prepare it, etc. That was a thick book, my mom said. When you get a sty in your eye or some kind of, you know, like sometimes you get that, like a cord or whatever.
Yeah.
A chamomile tea bag. As hot as you can take it.
Yep.
Put it on. If you have blocked sinuses, right, or even a sore throat, hot boiling water, a couple of bags again of chamomile tea, a towel, and you will you'll feel 1,000% better, right?
And the towel is that you place over your head over the steam bowl.
Oh, sorry. Yes, it's like a steam bath for your head.
That's right. Correct. That's right.
100%. So there are things that my mum did for me. I had the chicken pox. I was 19 or something like that, or 18. I had very little. I was sick. My temperature was burning up. And she put ice compressors around my legs to cool me down. Look, sunburn. I had this worst sunburn you can imagine. I mean, I was a lobster, and mom put yogurt, or a cold yogurt, and lo and behold, it was good. I mean, you know, the skin peeled, but the heat was taken away, the pain was taken away, and only one or two layers of skin would eventually peel off. There are things that you might know, and all of that would be gold to know, right? Now, how do you make yogurt? That's the thing, you know, still. But certainly, you know. Hopefully enough to get by, hopefully if a community. But again, I come back to my original point. Not a single person is telling you to prepare for what will happen. This is no longer a question of if, because we can't stop it. Okay? I don't even know if we ever had a position to stop it in the first place, right? But even if we were, it's not going to be stopped. And we will see the effects of a changing world. It will change in our lifetime. Okay, that I can promise you. Okay, how bad it is, I don't know, but it will be worse if you don't prepare. I can promise you that. Do you think the lotto is this day? Okay, the chance of winning lotto, depending on how many numbers are being drawn, etc., out of how many numbers, but it's usually 1 in 150 million,
something right? Like
120 to 150 million. So it's pretty small. It's pretty small. Now, if you don't play lotto, your chance of winning is zero. Not 1 in 120 million, not 1 in 150 million, zero. So look at it this way, right? If you prepare as best as you can, it's better than not preparing. Because if you don't prepare, you have zero chance. Okay? Zero. None. If you prepare, you're better off than the person that hasn't prepared. Okay,
that's the truth.
Be better. Yeah, it is. And I'm not talking about outlandish things, really. I mean, just be prepared, be smart, have stuff at home. Okay, be able to do things. Okay, keep yourself in relatively good shape. I know it gets harder as you get older. I'm getting older. It's getting harder. I know, right? Encourage your family, friends, and children to have skills, like real life skills. For example, and being able to play music. If you're musical and you can play music, I mean, instruments might survive, but some might survive, or you can make them yourself, really simple ones. I mean, it goes a long way for entertainment, because one of the things we have to fend off once we've sort of sorted out survival is boredom.
Oh, right? Yes.
Right? That's and storytelling will come back. Maybe your kids, encourage them to be athletic, you know, or encourage them to read.
I've got
so
one.
They have a, go on.
So I, both of my kids went to first Cubs, then
good.
Then Scouts, mm-hmm. and one of them went on to Venturers. And I have to tell you that the knot tying skills that will be retained in their minds forever are better than mine. I can tie something using an amount of knots that are nonsensical, right? It's not going to go anywhere because I was never trained like that. But she just did not even 10 seconds worth of knotting, and that wasn't coming apart. Because they have exercises where they do that. They've even made that that bridge. What's it called? The Italian guy, the inventor.
Da Vinci.
Yeah, the Da Vinci Bridge.
Okay.
So there's the Da Vinci Bridge where you just make it out of, they look like random parts, but when you put them all together, it's as solid as an arch bridge. Right? So those kind of skills are really good. Being able to brave the elements and being out there and know what to do, that's really good. In Australia in particular, our bush tucker is extremely complicated to learn. But wherever you live in the world, wherever you are, try to understand what you can and can't eat, what's good for what kind of tools or matting or, you know, roofing, whatever it is. Try and learn that, because just retaining that a little tiny bit of knowledge is enough, but you've got to get yourself to the point where you've lived through the King of the Hill wars that occur with all those people who never prepared.
That's
for
right.
them to be compliant at the end, because there's only so much killing that they can do with weapons. Right?
Sorry.
You know what I'm saying? So King of the Hill is, there'll be several, you know, maybe hundreds of small gangs, and they end up with just one gang where most of the competitors were wiped out. And then trying to feed that army of people becomes unrealistic. You can't do it. So,
well, cannibalism is going to set in real quick, I can tell you that. No, I'm serious. Yeah, the easiest prey, especially after an event like that, to hunt will be humans.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. But then, as long as you can survive that, and you can eat and you know, survive as a family, unseen, traveling at night, stay sheltered, and try not to cook anything, try not to make any heat, because, you know, smoke and fire just attracts people who want it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that and get yourself away, find a nice place that might be suitable, if you can survive all those things, then that's the best place for you. You've done it. You've won that part of the game. So, but, you know, the simple things, Becky, you know, if you just treat it like, okay, so just pretend that this coming weekend or whatever, whenever you listen to this, doesn't matter, is going to be like there's a hurricane, but there isn't one. And, okay, so instead of going to the shops in desperation for things, why don't you have those things on hand at all times in your pantry?
Yeah.
Buy them this weekend rather than waiting for the weekend where you need them. because they'll still be there. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to worry. And that's the beginning of being able to understand how to stock yourself, train yourself to be able to get through something.
Yes, that's look, and that's really good advice, because obviously we're talking about things that don't perish, right? That's obviously clear. Get the non-perishables and stock up on that. And there are things you can buy, okay, that will in fact last you for a long, long time. Like honey doesn't actually go off.
That's right.
Ever. So if you're looking for a food staple that never goes off, honey is one of those, right? And there are others, like obviously salt. You can buy large quantities of salt. It's very handy for everything. In fact, salt and honey both. Yeah, preservation, but also wound treatments, right?
Oh, yes.
For this purpose, there's, I mean, the uses are endless. And there are certain other things like dried goods. Like, you'd be surprised how long dried beans will last you. Not a great meal, but sorry, that's not true. It's actually a really good meal if you have nothing else to eat. But learn to store things, right? Canned goods are good, of course, you know, especially really long-term canned goods. And there are a lot of outlets nowadays that sell a food that has been freeze-dried and packaged for the case, for those kinds of emergencies, which will last you 25 years. All you have to do is hydrate it. Okay, yeah. So if you've got water, and let's face it, if you don't have water, you're pretty much done.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
first order of business after even before shelter, I would say, make sure you can find water. That's the first thing you have to do, water. Make it potable as well. And that is really great to mention, that will see you through for the first critical 48, 96 hours. They're called life straws. You can drink pretty much from any water source, and you won't get sick.
And it cleans it as you're drinking it. Yes, that's right.
That's correct.
And
right?
There's moisture in the air, depending on what kind of catastrophe there is moisture in the air. And if you're familiar with being able to, condensation and how to utilize that for your benefit, you can do that. Lay some plastic in a hole with a cup and some leaves.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can absolutely drink it. There won't be any pathogens in there for the most part, because it takes brackish water and some time before. Because, I mean, this is just dew, really. This is just... And everybody knows that we can just drink dew of the plants.
That's right.
Really well. So look, there are ways.
Sorry, everyone. Good morning, by the way.
there are ways to do this. Mm-hmm. But again, I have to repeat this. No one is telling you to prepare. No one is. In fact, I don't even know if countries are preparing, because what we need to do, okay, is really to build facilities and future-proof ourselves to such a way that we can survive these things, like sea walls, right? That's a simple one, because we're already suffering from beach erosion, right, and from coastal erosion.
Yeah,
so that's happening. So sea walls are not a bad idea, but also we have to ensure the safety of our groundwater. Right, because if sea levels are rising, right, for argument's sake, that could affect groundwater because it could seep through. Right? This is not a hermetically sealed kind of system that we have here. So just put up maybe food stores and have emergency supplies ready for the population of whatever. Right, rather, see, FEMA was storing these thousands or tens of thousands of body bags, God knows.
Oh, their casks. They were. You could take three large people in each one.
Yeah, that's a bit.
They're like caskets. Caskets.
Bit morbid, but look, and the thing is this, and I spoke about this before. I know, but it's important. Back in the 70s, there was a really bad storm cyclone that hit the top end. I think it was Darwin was hit. The destruction was phenomenal. There was loss of life.
Cyclone Tracy, it was.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know what the funny thing is? Well, not funny, but the good thing was that the people in charge, like there was this they sent this general, a brigadier general, up to oversee the entire operation. So he was the person in charge. The buck stopped with him, right? He went up there, and he had served in World War II. He's old, but he had served in World War II. He was, commanding officer then as well, and he had gone, obviously, through the whole military thing, and he just applied common sense and military discipline and got it all done in a couple of weeks. People evacuation, the rebuilding effort had started, the government chipped in, it was all done. It was just done. I know this is hard to understand today, but it was just done.
Yeah, sure.
And now I look at these politicians and none of them strike me as competent.
They're Play-Doh, Mickey.
Yeah, they're Gumbies. That's true. You're right. It is terrifying to think that if there were a crisis, these people would be in charge, because I wouldn't trust them to wash my car. I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I would get not a one of them, because something would go wrong. I get in the car and all the suds would be inside. What happened? Oh, we're not sure. We're forming a committee to determine which committees need to be formed to find out what the best approach for the investigation should be.
Oh, that's right.
Much, much better.
What's the first action? We need to name the committee.
That's right. And the second action, well, we need a chair, the co-chair, right?
That's right. So we'll have to vote those in.
Oh, but it's a two-party preferred vote. What does it even mean?
Hey, we're not wrong.
Unfortunately, we're right on the money, Dave. But it is that bad. And I know people will go, oh, that's not fair, Mackie. Really, it's not fair, isn't it? Have you looked at the country? Have you looked at the world?
In fact, it doesn't matter where in the world you look.
Yeah.
So Texas has taken its border into its own control now. And it's got like 10 governors. And the governors are smart and agile. Yeah. So the federal system is just soft. Can't deal with anything with any urgency at all. It doesn't really know what the real truth is. And it does this soft on approach. It's useless, completely useless. And everyone has said this, that if AI ever, the government's so slow to react, it would already be too late, right? If anything happened with AI, you couldn't legislate anything.
Yeah, that's right.
To save yourself. And so Europe, if you're not sure, Europe, the farmers are revolting.
Oh, yeah. But you don't see that, do you?
Not in any media I can look at.
No.
I've got to go to citizen journalism and to find that.
Yeah.
So I think they're not reporting it around the world because they don't want your farmers in your part of the world to do the same thing. Because I think that's the only reason. And it's all for the same reasons that we're all experiencing around the world, and that is crazy inflation. There's obscene profits being made, and the farmer isn't getting those.
No.
And the end user's paying way too much. And this is what the investigations are looking into, is how much gouging is going on. And not collaboration, the other one, the bad version of it. And that's what they're looking into, see if that's really a thing. Yeah. Because where all of this inflation has come from, says the government.
Collusion, yes.
Collusion, that's right. Thank you. And okay. And we have more and more wars. I think there's two more countries now involved now, Mickey.
Are you keeping it?
Since the last time we spoke about it.
Who had Luxembourg on Monday with helicopters? Right? What? What does that even mean? What? Helicopters? Luxembourg? Yeah,
and what's our government passed today? I think they passed it already. I think it was a new industrial relations bill that says...
Oh, sorry, yeah, I saw that.
...that your boss isn't allowed to call you after hours.
Correct. Unless he pays you.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Jim, that's probably the most important thing the whole planet has wanted. They didn't legislate that men and women must be paid the same for the same role. No. Just, your boss can't call you. There you go.
After five, that's just beastly. It's beastly.
All those people who are on call going, good luck with that.
Clearly.
When I was doing 60 hours a week, Mickey, and I was being called and had, the alarms call me. At 3 in the morning, I'd get up and wander into the building to look for an intruder for some reason without a weapon. Yeah.
You're the weapon.
They probably have weapons. I wouldn't have one. Yeah, that was great. Where were the IR laws then, I'm going to tell you?
When I was on a deal, when I was still on deals back in the day,
mm-hmm.
The last 2 weeks, or even, depending on how big it was, how intense, how much competition, you worked through. I mean, I spent a month in Hong Kong, working weekends, days, and I flew back once home to Sydney. But that whole month I was just working. I didn't see much of Hong Kong at that time.
Yeah.
I spent weeks in Canberra working on a deal and living in a hotel. I'm the most, except for my wife, she's better. I'm the most proficient packer that you will ever come across. Right? I can travel the world for 6 weeks on a carry-on, not a problem.
Yeah.
And you're right though. I mean, I worked 60, 70, 80, 90 hours sometimes. Sometimes you'd work until 4 or 5 in the morning, go to your room, take a shower, maybe catch an hour, 2 hours shut eye, back down, breakfast, and
that's
back
right.
back into it. So, yeah, where were those labor laws then, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But the thing is, funny thing is, nobody actually ever asked you to do that, right? So you can't point a finger and say, "Oh, you made me do it." No, it was just what was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It was. For various reasons, but mostly cost savings because we didn't have enough people, or because time frames are so compressed and stupid that you can't get things done. But these days, the boss can't call you after 5. And now gig workers seem to have some rights. Now I don't know what those rights are, Dave.
They're not explained.
But they have rights now. But see, this is where it all falls apart for me, because, and I'm not saying I agree with the platforms. But truly, the platforms are just that. They provide a platform. So here's a platform that allows a person to place an order for a Big Mac or a Big Jack or a Big mm-hmm. Frank or Little Mary, right, on that thing. And then the algorithm finds a person that has registered with the platform that is willing to pick it up and bring it to the person. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. That's the magic, right? So who's employed here? Well, nobody, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, there you go. So they got rights now. Like what? To not pick up the order and deliver it? That's, they had that right always. You don't have to pick it up. You don't, no one is forcing you. So I have to read it. I'm sorry. I haven't read it. I have to read it. I have to understand it and see what it means. And maybe it's only for certain things. But if it's a platform-based business like...
The beauty of it.
Yeah, Airbnb, Uber, Manilock, all that stuff, Grab in Asia. If it's that, then there literally are no employers. There aren't any. I mean, Amazon is different. Okay, that's different. Okay, and people
true.
Working
that is true.
And people working for only one outfit in the gig economy. That's different because you can argue then, okay, well, you're actually working for that company, right?
But I know a guy that was in DoorDash and Uber Eats, and there's another one. I think it started up and disappeared. He was in all three.
Okay, well, you can be. Why not, right?
You can. Yeah, that's right. But he wasn't earning 3 times the wage. He was just making sure that he had work around, the clock. And it isn't much money.
No.
And it's
you're not going to buy your second Swiss chalet soon, are you, Dave?
No. And I was talking to a police officer who said that most of the fatalities and motor vehicle accidents are these. I don't want to say underclass. I mean, the people that are doing this contract work using one of those services, not Uber, as in the car driving people around, but the people who have the backpack with the food on them and the moped.
Delivery people, yeah.
Yeah. They're the most susceptible, and they break more of the rules and they have more of the accidents than any other vehicles now currently on our road.
Because the more deliveries you make and the quicker you make, so there are two factors here. Yeah. One is the faster you do it, the more jobs you can do. That's right. But secondly, the faster and better you deliver, the more likely is that you get good ratings. And this is where the social scoring comes in, right? Mm-hmm. The social credit. And the algorithm will then treat you favorably, assigning you work. So if you have a good rating to you, like, I don't know, 5 stars, whatever, it the algorithm is meant to recognize that and channel more work your way. So it's two factors here that would make you put yourself and others, in fact, at risk. But it's a wonderful world, Dave, and we've come so far, and everything is just going to be so good. And our master controller AI, whom I like to call, he's going to be a Grondlore, Lord of the Wastes. All hail Grondlore. it will be and the thing is, I'll see it, Dave is going to see it when it all happens, and we'll be in the corner saying I told you so, which will have no effect on anything whatsoever. Completely pointless. There's two old guys pointing at the sky and yelling obscenity.
You've
got to be kidding me. Thank you so much for allowing us into your home for this brief hour. We'll be back on Sunday with Shining Side Out, of course. Tune in to Solaris before that, a couple hours before our show on Sunday. Donate if you can, really important, really, really important. But the most important thing, of course, as always, is be safe.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.